This podcast is produced by KPP Financial. Steve Peasley, President, simplifying a complex money world with investment programs to match a range of investment goals and risk tolerances. And now today's podcast.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to Invest Talk. This is our April 12th, 2017 edition of Invest Talk, and we're here to help you break through the barriers of the average investor. And there are many, but making decisions without the benefit of good information or letting emotions into the equation are crucial. And those are two of the main slip-ups that the average person makes. Not having good enough information and allowing their emotions to guide their decision-making process. Now today, we're going to talk about mutual funds. Have you read your prospectus? What you don't know can cost you. We're going to talk about seven things you need to know about mutual funds. That's one of our main talking points today. Now, on the most recent InvestTalk Views episode that I recorded last week, I talked about the nine mistakes that beginning investors make. Now, if you're just starting out on this journey, it could be worth a look for you. Just go to investtalk.com, click on the InvestTalk tab, and then commentary. But beginners don't have an exclusive lock making missteps or overlooking some of the important factors that go into picking stocks and bonds and funds, etc. Now, how about company management? Now, great management can be a difference between an innovative and profitable company and one that is constantly chasing the leaders and burning through shareholder value. Now, here's one example. Amazon, CEO Jeff Bezos, he's earned his pay in spades by being an innovative leader. And he's really changed the landscape of the retail industry and how consumers purchase goods. Now, Warren Buffett, on the other hand, is valuable due to his prowess of finding bargain investments that create strong shareholder value over time by just owning great businesses. So a great leader can create value in various aspects. It's not just being innovative, but it could be making the right acquisitions. Illinois Tool Works comes to mind. They buy a lot of very specialized type of shops, industrial shops, all the time. And that creates a very diversified, broad base of capabilities. And that's all about right acquisition, right? Now, other CEOs are constantly behind trends, and they burn money by either copying the leaders that they're trying to get after rather than innovating, or they purchase companies for way too high a price and don't see the issues that are involved with maybe integrating that company or the risk to the business model of the companies they're purchasing as well. Could have unrealistic goals. And ultimately, that's going to waste company resources. And company resources are your resources as a shareholder. So these are just a few of the ways management can be a champion for you, the shareholder, or be a drag on your investment returns. And then there are intangible assets. These assets are really hard to value. They tend to create some sort of competitive advantage to the company through intellectual property. Now, this could be a brand. Think of Disney and all of their Disney characters. Think of Coca-Cola or Apple or any of the big names that you would automatically recognize. Could be patents on various technologies. Think of Qualcomm. They make a whole business out of their patents on mobile technology. And there's trade secrets and just how they source and produce certain goods or services. And then goodwill. Now, goodwill is an intangible asset you really don't want to see very often. And goodwill is created when an acquisition is made by spending more on in the merger than the acquired company is actually worth, by banking on synergies and cost savings to make up the difference. And this is what I talk about when you're looking at leaders that overspend to make up for the lack of innovative ideas and strong leadership in themselves. Now, a small amount of goodwill in an acquisition as a percentage of the entire asset is not a big deal, because there usually always is some sort of synergy or cost savings, things that can really bring value to the shareholder. But a good manager makes sure they don't overpay and pay more than those synergies are really worth. And that indicates bad discipline on the part of management. So when you're analyzing companies, you got to look at broader trends, economic movement, and you know, you're really in a 360 degree, three-dimensional world. There's a lot coming at you. We talk about not taking one piece of data and making decisions off of it. And that's extremely important. And it's important to be monitoring the industry, monitoring the leadership, monitoring the economic trends, and keeping the data fresh. Because in many industries, things move fast. Think of technology, right? BlackBerry was the king of the world back in 2005 and 6. And all of a sudden, Apple came along with iPhone and bam, smacked it right across the head, and it's never recovered. So this is the process of understanding companies, industries, and really making sound decisions based on facts, not emotions. Now, we'll try to help in any way we can here on Invest Talk. Let's get to work answering your questions. Any money questions are welcome. Our Invest Talk listener line is 888-99-CHART. That's how to reach us with your question or comment anytime, 24 hours a day.
Hey, Steve, this is Ryan. I have a question about IPO shares and how it does seem to be rigged towards institutional investors versus the individual investor. Take Snap, for example, where the initial price was $17, but was never actually on the market for that price and didn't actually go on the market until it was at $24. So the individual investor was never able to buy it at $17 compared to the other type of investor. So just curious as to why they are allowed to get it at that price and the individual investor is not. Thanks for your help, and I enjoy the podcast. Thanks.
Great question, and it's a fairly simple answer. And this is why we always guard against IPOs and think that they're not great investments, especially after they've actually hit the market. Now, if you can get it pre-IPO and you have a good amount of money and a great relationship with a broker, you might be able to get in on the ground floor, like on Snap at 17, and then sell it once it does finally hit the marketplace, which that would have been a great trade because it, you know, it debuted about $10 higher than that. And the reason it's rigged towards institutions is, guess what? Institutions have tens of millions, hundreds of millions, sometimes billions of dollars to throw at this IPO. So if you're an underwriter, your job is to sell the shares. Now, are you going to go around to every Tom, Dick, and Harry that's on your broker list and call them up and ask them, do you want to put $5,000 in this IPO? How many calls is that going to take? A lot. Or would you rather call up your big institutional hedge funds, private equity funds, mutual funds, and say, would you like to buy $5 million in this IPO? And guess how much faster they're going to sell those shares of the stock? A million times faster. So that's exactly why it is rigged towards the institution. And if you, as an individual investor, you just have $50,000, a couple hundred thousand dollars, and your broker comes to you and says you should buy this IPO, the odds are all the smart money, the big institutions, passed on it because they got the call first. I'm financial advisor and licensed realtor Justin Klein. What can we talk about today that would really be important to you? We talk stock and bonds, but there are other important money topics that have an impact on your daily life as well. It's an open line. 8899 Charters, our live listener line call number, every weekday from 4 to 5 Pacific time. Seven things you need to know about mutual funds. It's one of our main talking points today, but I have some others as well. We're going to touch on why Elon Musk's little Twitter rampage, I don't want to say rampage, but one of his tweets today in response to a letter from five investment groups, large institutional investment groups. His response was to, if you don't like it, invest in Ford and not Tesla. So I'm going to talk about why I think that's a horrible idea for Elon and Tesla as a whole to be responding in that manner. And then miners are dropping. Steel names are dropping. Finally. I mean, they've been dropping a little bit, but they really got hit today. And I've been saying this for a while about the Trump trade. Trump bump will turn into the Trump dump, and it's already started. I'm going to talk a little bit of what's been triggering this drop in the metals space. When I say metals, I'd say industrial metals, not precious metals. And then lastly, earnings season starts tomorrow, and there's three banks that report in the morning: JP Morgan, Wells Fargo, and Citigroup. And I want to touch on where valuations are, what's expected for the quarter, and whether or not the market's going to live up to those expectations. So 8899 chart is our number, 8899-242-78. I want to hear from you. Now, let's take a look at the market today. The Dow was down 59, S&P down 8, and NASDAQ was down 30. Pretty big down day on the NASDAQ and small caps as well. It looks like, what was IWM down? I always look at IWM, the Russell. That was down 1.5%. That's a big, big move for the small caps after it had a pretty strong day yesterday. So continuation, underneath it all, you're seeing a lot of weakness, and the Trump dump is starting to, I think, snowball a little bit. As there, you know, what are we about? Almost 60 days into this almost 90 days into this presidency. Wow. And there still hasn't been any major reform, any of the promises from the Trump administration, healthcare reform, infrastructure, tax reform, etc. Still all been talk, and it's going to be pushed off a lot longer than people expect and likely diluted. Now, this is Invest Talk. I'm Justin Klein. 8899 chart is how to reach me now, 4 to 5 Pacific time. Love to hear from you.
Hi, guys. I'm calling in regards to the stock Eli Lilly, LLY. Wanted to see if this would be a good time to get into the stock or what would be a good price as an entry point. So I'll be listening for the answer on your show. Thank you.
He's looking at Eli Lilly. LLY is the symbol. They're one of the largest drug companies out there. $95 billion market cap. Yields about 2.4%. 2.4%, which is in this market, not amazing, but solid nonetheless. It has good positive cash flow on a consistent basis. The big question is it attractive at a PE of 24? We have an operating earnings yield of just 4.2%. Not very attractive from a valuation standpoint. Now, sales are growing 7% year over year. Earnings up 62% year over year. It's dividend safe, but it has rallied from a low of about high 60s, it looks like, into right now it's at 86.25 at the close today. And I'm going to say you've missed a lot of it. You're coming up into huge, huge, huge resistance around the 90 level and 88, 90 level. You're just a couple bucks away from that. Now, so it could have some more upside in the near term. But I think at these levels, the valuations are just stretched. So I would keep on your watches. Certainly a good company, a company that over time has return on invested capital in the low teens. Back in the mid-2000s, it was as high as 29, which is very, very good. They have a modest amount of debt, which I like. It's their return on assets has dropped a little bit since the mid-90s, but overall, it's still healthy. So a good company to have on your watch list, but you've totally missed the boat and you're up against resistance. It's really going to need to consolidate up here for many, many months to really get through that 90 level. So keep it on your watch list. And if it gets into back into the low 70s, right now it's in the mid 80s, that's where I'd start thinking about picking up Eli Lilly. LLY is a symbol. Let's go to Robbie, or is it Roby, in Santa Clara.
Oh, hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for making
it. This is regarding the stock symbol BMY, okay. Bristol Myers.
Yep.
I know the, is it a good entry point for the stock?
Let me see. It has dropped pretty substantially. It's making lower lows and lower highs, right? I don't like that because it did make a low in December, and it bounced from there into January, fell again to new lows in February, rallied again into March, and now it's headed back down again. So there's technically, it's still very, very weak, and that worries me. Are you looking for it for the dividend growth? I mean, what's your expectations here?
Yeah, a dividend.
Yes, dividend,
growth.
Okay.
A little bit of growth, not too much on the growth, more on the dividend side.
You know, I think I would need a little bit higher dividend. I don't like the technical aspect of it. And I've said this a lot on the air, that the drug sector overall worries me a lot, especially because of the recent hikes in drug prices and the scrutiny from Congress. They're going to be redoing the healthcare bill. So there's certain new risks of issues around drug prices in there. So that worries me a little bit. So to me, I would need above a 4% dividend yield for me to get excited about this and take on that potential regulatory risk in the drug space. And right now you're trading at an operating earnings yield of only 5.2%. That's not high enough yet. Okay, so I would need, let me give you a number where I'd buy it. I probably still, technically, and everything that's going on with it, still looks very, very weak. $33. It's at 53 today. That's where I would buy it. That's where I'd say, okay, this is cheap enough. This is attractive enough and worth the risk to get in. So once again, keep on your watch list. But it's not cheap enough. The technical levels or technical trends on the stock look very, very poor. And I just think it's something that's going to continue lower unless there's a major news out on the stock. And I wouldn't be buying it yet, but keep it on your watch list. Thanks for calling. 8899 chart is our number, 888-992-4278. Wow, the first half of the show flew by pretty fast, so we're coming up at the halfway mark on this Wednesday edition of Invest Talk. I want to hear from you. What's on your mind? What money questions do you have? I'm going to talk a little bit about mutual funds and what seven things you need to focus on if you're owning and buying mutual funds. I'm going to talk about Elon Musk and at Tesla overall. Miners, metals, there's a lot to talk about, but your priority number one. Whatever is on your mind, give us a call. I want to hear about it. 888-99-CHART.
Our podcast continues next. First, a couple of words for KPP Financial and good reason number five for a portfolio checkup with Steve. Steve says many of the portfolios he looks at are weighted in just one or two sectors. A diverse mix of market sectors is so important to the health of a retirement portfolio, and Steve can help you reorganize your retirement. He can make suggestions about the sectors of the future, and if you like, a KPP Financial program that fits your goals and life situations today. There's never a cost for InvestTalk listeners, and no sales pitch or obligation of any kind, ever. To schedule your one-hour checkup with Steve, just go to investtalk.com and click on the InvestTalk tab, and then Portfolio Review. Steve schedules a limited number of hours each month, so call now and reserve yours, 888-99-CHART, and follow the prompts or go to investtalk.com, click on the InvestTalk tab, and then Portfolio Review. And now, let's get back to the podcast. Invest Talk continues on next time. Familiarity with fundamentals is a key component to a successful strategy. Do you know how you're invested? Steve will talk about that next time on Invest Talk. And you set the topic right now. Call us at 888-99-CHART with any money question.
Let's go to Cindy in Menlo Park. How are you doing, Cindy?
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
No problem.
I have a question about Alibaba.
Okay.
Yeah, what's the entry point for Alibaba?
Ooh, what's the entry point? You know, this is a difficult one. It's certainly not cheap at these levels. I wouldn't say it's drastically overvalued. We've already had a pretty big run here from a low in, call it the end of last year, about $90, call it. Now it's at $110. So you've rallied already 20% this year. It is poking above new highs, trying to break out. And it certainly could keep going. So my question is, first off, what's your time horizon?
What's my time horizon?
Yeah. How long do you think you want to hold it? Is this a trade? Is this something you plan to hold 6 months,
no,
a year, 6 years?
Maybe years, 5 years.
5 years? Well, then, to me, this is, I buy it here. You know, it's in an uptrend. It's a name that's not terribly overvalued. It's certainly not undervalued by any means. But 6 years from now, the odds are you'll probably be up at it as long as Alibaba's business stays intact and they continue to grow at a 45% revenue clip, which they're doing now. So, it's going to be volatile. You have to expect volatility. There is a very high likelihood that at some point you'll be down 20% from these levels in the next 6 years, 5 years. But you have to be prepared for that. If you're not, this isn't the name for you. Okay? But it's not terribly overvalued. So I would just buy it here, go with the trend, and go with the name if you like the name.
Wait, if I hold it for only 2 years?
Then that's a lot more precarious. You know, what happens? The recession, bear market, things could change dramatically. So you really have to understand this is a volatile name. look, just go back to 2000 and let's see, I guess it IPO'd back in 2013 or so, 14. Hit a high of 115, went is all the way down to a low of $57. So we're now 50%. That can easily happen with this name in the next 2 years. Don't think it can't. You need to prepare. This is a growth name. You're buying growth. If the growth isn't sustained, this will get crushed. If the growth is sustained, it will go much higher. This is a very high risk name, and if you need to be prepared for that, that is priority and prerequisite A number one. You have to be prepared for that.
All right, thank you.
Thanks, Cindy. Seven things you need to know about mutual funds. Now, whether you're an experienced investor, beginning investor, you probably know what a mutual fund is. They're easily bought in brokerage accounts, 401ks, etc. They're low minimum cost. In today's market, there's a lot of no low, no transaction fee funds as well. And they've been around for a long, long time, since 1924. And according to the Investment Company Institute, nearly half of all U.S. households now invest in mutual funds, primarily through their 401k. Now, they're very popular because they have easy access. You can have access to different strategies and securities, asset classes, etc. You get instant exposure to hundreds of stocks or hundreds of bonds or commodities or whatever it is. REITs, maybe. And you don't have to do individual research on all individual securities. Now, often the fund's expenses, however, can be higher than you think. Now, there are the stated expenses like administrative, management, marketing fees, any front-end or back-end commissions, which you should never pay. But there are some unstated expenses as well. But you have to know where to look to find them. One is trading costs when they buy and sell securities. The greater the activity, the higher the cost. And then there's capital gains distributions that they could have if they take a lot of profits, known as a 1099. And here's what to consider when you're looking at mutual funds. One is portfolio turnover. How often are they trading? It's stated as a percentage. So 100% portfolio turnover, meaning means that whatever the average value of the money in that fund is, they trade that amount on an annual basis. Number two, the tenure of the fund manager. How long have they been there? If you're looking at a track record, is it the same fund manager that created that track record, or is it a different fund manager? Number three, watch out for misleading advertising or fund names. There's a lot of fund names that look sexy and exciting, and they look profitable, but they're not. But history says that they're just not great funds, or there's risks that maybe the name is hiding, or the marketing is not talking about. Number four, be clear about the risk tied to a bond mutual fund. And we talk a lot of times about duration risk and long-term bond funds and how when you invest in bond funds, if interest rates go up, that can be a big issue because you could permanently lose your principal if interest rates don't rise back to those levels. You might still get interest, but that original price might not get back to. But then there's also credit risk. Think of high-yield bond funds. They can go down dramatically in a recession. Then there's the cost of dead money if they have too much cash. Reading a perspective is important to really understand what you're getting into. And lastly, Morningstar ratings. We use Morningstar. We don't use a ton of mutual funds. Very, very small percentage of our clients hold mutual funds nowadays. And we're actually moving our clients away from mutual funds. But when we do, we look at Morningstar ratings, but they're not the end-all be-all. You have to look at how well that fund did against its peers. What were the risk-adjusted returns? And the are metrics that you need to look out for that. And you know, that goes into another type of talking point that maybe we'll get to another day. But those are some aspects that you need to consider when you're looking at mutual funds. Now, save the date for our next Invest Talk Wealth webinar. This one is perfect for the hands-on investor who wants to hone their analytical skills. We're calling it Fundamental and Technical Analysis Back to Basics. And I'll be hosting this along with one of our other KPP financial advisors, Jason Toper. He's more focused kind of on fixed income and our income strategy. And the date of this is going to be April 26th, just I guess it would be 2 weeks from today, at 6:30 p.m. Pacific time. We're going to go for an hour. This is free. It's going to be called Fundamental Technical Analysis Back to Basics. We're going to talk about what metrics matter most, how to screen for attractive stocks, and identify chart patterns that work in today's market. Once again, it's going to be an hour long from 6:30 to 7:30 p.m. Pacific time. It is free, but you do have to sign up. Space is limited, but registration is now open on investtalk.com. Just go there, scroll down to the webinar section, click on it, and you'll be able to sign up. So sign up now. It's free. And once again, the date is April 26th at 6:30 p.m. Pacific time.
If you live near Ramona in Northern California, Steve will be there April 25th for individual retirement reviews. And if you're not near our California offices, Steve can meet with you via Skype or telephone. It's easy. If you'd like to set up a time, just go to investtalk.com, click on the Invest Talk tab, and then Portfolio Review.
Hey, Steve. This is Sloan in New Mexico. I would love to get your opinion on what to do with my stock in Therapeutics MD. That's ticker symbol TXMD. They were steadily on the rise, and I got in last week on Thursday. And then yesterday, some report came out and the stock plummeted 20%. What do you think I should do in this case now that they're going to report their earnings in May? But at this point, should I just get out and cut my 20% loss or stay in and figure it out? Would love to know what you think. Thank you so much.
Sell it. This is another biotech name. Okay. They don't make money. I know they're projected to make money next year, but they never made money. This is what happens to these names. And when they go up and you're up 30%, you need to take money off the table. Be happy that these are lottery tickets, okay? And you could hit it big or you can get destroyed by them. And these are the type of news that comes out and happens. Their cash flow from operations has always been negative. So they've always been burning cash and they continue to burn cash. And I know analysts expect them to make money next year, but that's probably not going to happen because that tends to be the case with biotech names. So let's move on. I know it sucks because it's down big already, but you know, could news come out and pop it back up? Sure. But Ninety-nine out of 100 of these biotech names eventually just destroy all shareholder value and go bankrupt. Okay. And, you know, it used to be that it was about acquisitions, but those are a lot less frequent today. Right? It used to be large pharma was trying to fill its pipeline. They buy these small companies like Therapeutics MD and finish developing the drug, bring it to market, plug it into their distribution pipelines, and boom, the acquisition was worthwhile. And a lot of times they could charge astronomical prices for the drug. And like I've said before, this space is fraught with danger. And I would not be excited to be in the biotech space, the pharma space. It worries me to no end. We have, I don't even know if we have any positions in the healthcare realm at the current time. So move on from TXMD. Now, there was a letter sent on Monday by five investment groups to Tesla. This was from the California Teachers Retirement System, Hermes Equity Ownership Services, and CTW Investment Groups, along with a couple more. And they urged Tesla to have all of its board of directors reelected annually in order to bring fresh perspective to the board, third-party perspective to the board. Okay, they want independent directors outside of Elon Musk and his family members and close friends. And today, Elon responded by saying the investor group should buy Ford stock. Their governance is amazing. Now, this is just after Tesla is valued by more than Ford and GM. Highest value car company in the U.S. or in the world, really. And frankly, this is an absolute joke. Tesla is the epitome of a story stock. And I know we have a lot of listeners up in Silicon Valley where Tesla is located. We probably have a lot of Tesla drivers that could be listening. And this isn't a knock on Tesla cars, which for all I understand and all I've experienced, they're fairly good cars. Now, they're below average quality on average if you look at the numbers. But from a user experience and an ownership satisfaction perspective, they're good cars. But when you're looking at this as an investment, as a long-term viable company, it is a disaster. And the fact that Elon is kind of throwing this back in these investors' face, basically saying, screw you. To me, that's idiotic because Tesla is burning billions of dollars in cash annually. I'll say a billion, roughly. And they need to spend a few billion more just to get the Model 3 up and running. And they may not even be profitable after the Model 3. In fact, it's unlikely they're profitable after the Model 3 is up and running. And guess what they're going to need? They're going to need more shareholders. They're going to need to raise more capital. Who's going to give them that capital to keep on going? Shareholders. And if you just say, I don't care when shareholders, large shareholders, are asking you to do a very simple thing by bringing independent directors to your board, to me you're saying I don't need you, when in fact he really does. If you're listening to Invest Talk, glad you're here today. I want to hear from you. 888-99-CHART. Let's go to Jim in Indiana. How you doing, Jim?
I'm good. How are you today, Justin?
I'm doing well. What can I help you with?
Well, I was calling today. We had our home and property refinance not too long ago, and along with that, we had an appraiser come out, and I was kind of grilling him about, we've got a horse property in Indiana, and you know, so the valuation that he put on the barns was a lot less than what I would consider a valuation for the barn. I've had contractors come in and say, you know, to put these barns up new, just the shell, you're looking at $130,000 plus. Mm-hmm. For what we have under roof for just the barns, not including the house and land. And the appraiser didn't put any value on the barns almost at all. It was negligible when he appraised the property. But, you know, horses are kind of our business. We're looking at expanding it. But at the same time, I don't want to go flushing a bunch of money down the toilet, putting up a bunch of new barns. If at some point, I need, you know, I'm going to retire and the thing has to be sold. And then I just created a facility and a barn and a house and everything that's, I've just got a whole lot of sunk costs in it.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes sense. You don't why put the money in if your cash flow out of it's only going to be short term.
Right. So the big question is, what is the, because his comment was, you know, on a real estate market, you might actually get some good value out of those barns, but not necessarily from my perspective in valuing it.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess that's the question is there real value in those barns, or is it just a sunk cost?
Well, there is value if at the time of sale, there's somebody in the market that is interested in that type of property with that type of feature that, you know, has the same, you know, as a horse trainer, like you, who may use those barns for those purposes. But it's a very niche feature that only a very select amount of buyers will care about and pay up for, right? And
right.
Odds are you're not going to have multiple people in the marketplace looking for or demanding that particular feature as well. So there's not really going to be a bidding war either. So it certainly is a feature that from an appraisal standpoint isn't going to put a lot of weight in from a valuation perspective, because there's no guarantee that those features are going to be in demand when you come and time to sell it. Could there be? Sure. But from an appraisal standpoint, there isn't a lot of value in it. And so the reality is, yeah, it is kind of a sunk cost, because you would need to have the proper demand for those facilities in that area. And I'm not sure if that's something that's very popular in that area or not.
That's a matter of perspective. When you actually mm-hmm. look at the numbers, there's a lot of horse business around here, probably more so than in Texas or Oklahoma, and,
mm-hmm.
you know, per capita.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, there isn't that perspective of value in facilities like this in this area. So, you know, I guess it goes both ways. And
mm-hmm. yeah, I think it's one of those things where it probably would be a sunk cost for the most part. You may get extract some value out of it, especially if you can put it on the market and be patient and waiting for somebody that's really looking for that type of property and that would pay up for the facilities, and you'll be able to extract some value out of it. But even then, the odds of you recouping the cost of what you were saying, $140,000 to really put these up, I really don't think that's I wouldn't bank on that. Let's say that.
Well, yeah, I knew that. I mean, there's certainly depreciation that goes along with it anyway, but
yeah. I understand where the appraiser is coming from, and I would, and we're, I, you know, I'm conservative, Steve's conservative, we're a pretty conservative group, and we would definitely think of that as a sunk cost, and anything you get out of it is just a plus, and that's the way I would make that determination. Thanks for calling, Jim. It looks like we're done for this hour. I'm financial advisor Justin Klein, Chief Executive Officer of KFP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm. You can reach me directly with a question or comment. Just go to investtalk.com, click on the Contact Justin button. We'll get back to you. On behalf of CPs and everyone at KFP, thank you for being with us. Let's plan on getting together tomorrow.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.